We're continuing chapter one of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. And if you remember, Fudge was talking with the Prime Minister of England. And we're seeing it sort of from the Prime Minister's perspective a bit. But they had seen each other again. Less than a year later, a harassed-looking Fudge had appeared out of thin air in the cabinet room to inform the Prime Minister that there had been a spot of bother at the Quidditch, or that was what it sounded like, World Cup, and that several Muggles had been involved, but that the Prime Minister was not to worry. The fact that You-Know-Who's mark had been seen, again, meant nothing. Fudge was sure it was an isolated incident, and the Muggle liaison office was dealing with all the memory modifications as they spoke. "Oh, and I almost forgot," Fudge had added. "We're importing 3 foreign dragons and a sphinx for the Triwizard Tournament. Quite routine, but the Department for the Regulation and Control of Magical Creatures tells me that it's down in the rulebook that we have to notify you if we're bringing highly dangerous creatures into the country."
Dragons?
Spluttered the Prime Minister.
"Yes, 3, said Fudge, "and a sphinx. Well, good day to you."
The Prime Minister had hoped beyond hope that dragons and sphinxes would be the worst of it, but no. Less than 2 years later, Fudge had erupted out of the fire yet again, this time with the news that there had been a mass breakout from Azkaban.
"A mass breakout?" repeated the Prime Minister hoarsely.
"No need to worry, no need to worry," shouted Fudge, already with 1 foot in the flames. "We'll have them rounded up in no time at all. Just thought that you ought to know." And before the Prime Minister could shout, "Now just wait one moment," Fudge had vanished in a shower of green sparks. Whatever the press and the opposition might say, the Prime Minister was not a foolish man. It had not escaped his notice that, despite Fudge's assurances at their first meeting, they were now seeing rather a lot of each other, nor that Fudge was becoming more flustered with each visit. Little though he liked to think about the Minister of Magic, or, as he always called Fudge in his head, the other minister, the Prime Minister could not help but fear that the next time Fudge appeared, it would be with graver news still. The sight, therefore, of Fudge stepping out of the fire once more, looking disheveled and fretful and sternly surprised that the Prime Minister did not know exactly why he was there, was about the worst thing that had happened in the course of this extremely gloomy week.
"How should I know what's going on in the wizarding community?" snapped the Prime Minister now. "I have a country to run and quite enough concerns at the moment without..."
"We have the same concerns," Fudge interrupted. "The Brockdale Bridge didn't wear out. That wasn't really a hurricane. Those murders were not the work of Muggles, and Herbert Chorley's family would be safer without him. We are currently making arrangements to have him transferred to St. Mungo's Hospital for magical maladies and injuries. The move should be effected tonight."
"What do you... I'm afraid I..."
"What?" blustered the Prime Minister. Fudge took a great, deep breath and said, "Prime Minister, I am very sorry to have to tell you that he's back. He who must not be named is back."
"Back? When you say back, he's alive? I mean..."
The Prime Minister groped in his memory for the details of that horrible conversation of 3 years previously, when Fudge had told him about the wizard who was feared above all others, the wizard who had committed 1,000 terrible crimes before his mysterious disappearance 15 years earlier.
"Yes, alive," said Fudge. "That is... I don't know how... Is a man alive if he can't be killed? I don't really understand it, and Dumbledore won't explain properly, but anyway, he's certainly got a body and is walking and talking and killing, so I suppose, for the purposes of our discussion here, yes, he's alive."
The Prime Minister did not know what to say at this, but a persistent habit of wishing to appear well-informed on any subject that came up made him cast around for any details he could remember of their previous conversation.
"Is Sirius Black, or, he must not be named?"
"Black? Black?" said Fudge distractedly, turning his bowler rapidly in his fingers.
"Sirius Black, you mean. Merlin's beard, no. Black's dead. Turns out we were mistaken about Black. He was innocent, after all. And he wasn't in league with you, must not be named either. I mean," he added, defensively, spinning the bowler hat still faster. "All evidence pointed. We had more than 50 eyewitnesses. But anyway, I say, he's dead. Murdered, as a matter of fact. On Ministry of Magic premises. There's going to be an inquiry, actually." To his great surprise, the Prime Minister felt a fleeting stab of pity for Fudge at this point. It was, however, eclipsed almost immediately by a glow of smugness at the thought that, deficient though he might himself be in the area of materializing out of fireplaces, there had never been a murder in any of his government departments under his charge. Not yet, anyways. While the Prime Minister surreptitiously touched the wood of his desk, Fudge continued. But Black's by the by now. The point is, we're at war, Prime Minister, and steps must be taken. At war, repeated the Prime Minister nervously. Surely that's a little bit of an overstatement. He who must not be named has now been joined by those of his followers who broke out of Azkaban in January, said Fudge, speaking more and more rapidly and twirling his bowler so fast that it was a lime-green blur. Since they have moved into the open, they have been wreaking havoc. The Brockdale Bridge. He did it, Prime Minister. He threatened a mass muggle killing unless I stood aside for our men. Good grief, so it's your fault those people were killed, and I'm having to answer questions about rusted rigging and corroded expansion joints, and I don't know what else, said the Prime Minister furiously. My fault, said Fudge, coloring up. Are you saying you would have caved into blackmail like that? Maybe not, said the Prime Minister, standing up and striding about the room. But I would have put all my efforts into catching the blackmailer before he committed any such atrocity. Don't you really think I wasn't making every effort? Demanded Fudge heatedly. Every auror in the ministry was, and is, trying to find him and round up his followers. We happen to be talking about one of the most powerful wizards of all time, a wizard who has eluded capture for almost 3 decades. So I suppose you're going to tell me he caused the hurricane in the West Country, too, said the Prime Minister, his temper rising with every pace he took. It was infuriating to discover the reason for all these terrible disasters and not to be able to tell the public, almost worse than it being the government's fault after all. That was no hurricane, said Fudge miserably. Excuse me, barked the Prime Minister, now positively stamping up and down. Trees uprooted, roofs ripped off, lampposts bent, horrible injuries. It was the Death Eaters, said Fudge. He must not be named followers, and we suspect giant involvement. The Prime Minister stopped in his tracks, as though he had hit an invisible wall. What involvement? Fudge grimaced. He used giants last time when he wanted to go for the grand effect, he said. The Office of Misinformation has been working around the clock. We've had teams of obliviators out trying to modify the memories of all the muggles who saw what really happened. We've got most of the Department for the Regulation and Control of Magical Creatures running around Somerset. But we can't find the giant. It's been a disaster. You don't say, said the Prime Minister furiously. I won't deny that morale is pretty low at the Ministry, said Fudge. What with all that, and then losing Amelia Bones. Losing who? Amelia Bones, head of the Department of Magical Law Enforcement. We think Hugh Must Not Be Named may have murdered her in person, because she was a very gifted witch, and all evidence was that she put up a real fight. Fudge cleared his throat, and with an effort, it seemed, stopped spinning his bowler hat. But that murder was in the newspapers, said the Prime Minister, momentarily diverted from his anger. Our newspapers. Amelia Bones. It just said she was a middle-aged woman who lived alone. It was a rather nasty killing, wasn't it? It's had rather a lot of publicity. The police are baffled, you see. Fudge sighed. Well, of course they are, he said. Killed in a room that was locked from the inside, wasn't she? We, on the other hand, know exactly who did it, not that that gets us any closer toward catching him. And then there was Emmeline Vance. Maybe you didn't hear about that one. Oh, yes, I did, said the Prime Minister. It happened just around the corner from here, as a matter of fact. The papers had a field day with it. Breakdown of law and order in the Prime Minister's backyard. As if that wasn't enough, said Fudge, barely listening to the Prime Minister. We've got Dementors swarming all over the place, attacking people left, right, and center. Once upon a happier time, this sentence would have been unintelligible to the Prime Minister, but he was wiser now. I thought Dementors guard the prisoners in Azkaban, he said cautiously. They did, said Fudge wearily, but not anymore. They've deserted the prison and joined He Who Must Not Be Named. I won't pretend that wasn't a blow. But, said the Prime Minister, with a sense of dawning horror, didn't you tell me they're creatures that drain hope and happiness out of people? That's right, said Fudge. And they're breeding. That's what's causing all this mist. The Prime Minister sank, weak-kneed, into the nearest chair. The idea of invisible creatures swooping through the towns and countryside, spreading despair and hopelessness to his voters, made him feel quite faint. "Now see here, Fudge, you've got to do something. It's your responsibility as Minister of Magic." "My dear Prime Minister, you can't honestly think I'm still Minister of Magic after all this. I was sacked 3 days ago. The whole wizarding community has been screaming for my resignation for a fortnight. I've never seen them so united in my whole term of office," said Fudge with a brave attempt at a smile. The Prime Minister was momentarily lost for words. Despite his indignation at the position in which he had been placed, he still rather felt for the shrunken-looking man sitting opposite him. "I'm very sorry," he said finally. "If there's anything I can do..." "It's very kind of you, Prime Minister, but there's nothing. I was sent here tonight to bring you up to speed on recent events and to introduce you to my successor. I rather thought he'd be here by now, but of course he's very busy at the moment with so much going on." Fudge looked around at the portrait of the ugly little man wearing the long, curly silver wig who was digging in his ear at the point of a quill. Catching Fudge's eye, the portrait said, "He'll be here in a moment. He's just finishing a letter to Dumbledore." "I wish him luck," said Fudge, sounding bitter for the first time. "I've been writing to Dumbledore twice a day for the past fortnight, but he won't budge. If he'd just been prepared to persuade the boy, I still might be... Well, maybe Scrimgeour will have more success." Fudge subsided into what was a clearly aggrieved silence, but it was broken almost immediately by the portrait, which suddenly spoke in its crisp official voice. "To the Prime Minister of Muggles, requesting a meeting. Urgent. Kindly respond immediately. Rufus Scrimgeour, Minister of Magic." "Yes, yes, fine," said the Prime Minister distractedly, and he barely flinched as the flames in the grate turned emerald green again, rose up, and revealed a second spinning wizard in their heart, disgorging him moments later into the antique rug. Fudge got to his feet, and after a moment's hesitation, the Prime Minister did the same, watching the new arrival straighten up, dust his long black robes, and look around. The Prime Minister's first foolish thought was that Rufus Scrimgeour looked rather like an old lion. There were streaks of gray in his mane of tawny hair and his bushy eyebrows. He had keen yellowish eyes behind a pair of wire-rimmed spectacles, and a certain rangy, loping grace, even though he walked with a slight limp. There was an immediate impression of shrewdness and toughness. The Prime Minister thought he understood why the wizarding community preferred Scrimgeour to Fudge as a leader in these dangerous times. "How do you do?" said the Prime Minister politely, holding out his hand. Scrimgeour grasped it briefly, his eyes scanning the room, then pulled out a wand from under his robes. "Fudge told you everything?" he asked, striding over to the door and tapping the keyhole with his wand. The Prime Minister heard the lock click. "Yes," said the Prime Minister. "And if you don't mind, I'd rather that door remain unlocked." "I'd rather not be interrupted," said Scrimgeour shortly. "Or watched," he added, pointing the wand at the windows, so that the curtains swept across them. "Right, well, I'm a busy man, so let's get down to business. First of all, we need to discuss your security." The Prime Minister drew himself up to the fullest height and replied, "I'm perfectly happy with the security I've already got, thank you very much." "Well, we're not," said Scrimgeour. "It'll be a poor lookout for the Muggles if their Prime Minister gets put under the imperious curse. The new secretary in your outer office..." "I'm not getting rid of Kingsley Shacklebolt, if that's what you're suggesting," said the Prime Minister hotly. "He's highly efficient, gets through twice the work of the rest of them." "That's because he's a wizard," said Scrimgeour without a flicker of a smile. "A highly trained Auror who's been assigned to you for your protection." "Now wait a moment," declared the Prime Minister. "You can't just put your people into my office. I decide who works for me." "I thought you were happy with Shacklebolt," said Scrimgeour coldly. "I am, that's to say, I was." "Then there's no problem, is there?" said Scrimgeour. "Well, as long as Shacklebolt's work continues to be excellent," said the Prime Minister lamely, but Scrimgeour barely seemed to hear him. "Now, about Herbert Chorley, your junior minister," he continued, "the one who has been entertaining the public by impersonating a duck?" "What about him?" asked the Prime Minister. He's clearly reacted to a poorly performed Imperius curse, said Scrimgeour. It's addled his brains, but he still could be dangerous.
He's only quacking, said the Prime Minister. Surely a bit of rest, maybe go easy on the drink.
A team of healers from St. Mungo's Hospital for Magical Maladies and Injuries are examining him as we speak. So far, he has attempted to strangle three of them, said Scrimgeour. I think it best we remove him from Muggle society for a while.
He'll be all right, won't he? Said the Prime Minister anxiously.
Scrimgeour merely shrugged, already moving back toward the fireplace.
Well, that's really all I had to say. I will keep you posted of developments, Prime Minister, or at least I shall probably be too busy to come personally, in which case I shall send Fudge here. He has consented to stay on in an advisory capacity.
Fudge attempted to smile, but was unsuccessful. He merely looked as though he had a toothache.
Scrimgeour was already rummaging in his pocket for the mysterious powder that turned the fire green.
The Prime Minister gazed hopelessly at the pair of them for a moment, and then the words he had fought to suppress all evening burst from him at last.
But for heaven's sake, you're wizards. You can do magic. Surely you can sort out, well, anything.
Scrimgeour turned slowly on the spot and exchanged an incredulous look with Fudge, who really did manage to smile this time as he said kindly,
The trouble is, the other side can do magic too, Prime Minister.
And with that, the two wizards stepped one after the other into the bright green fire and vanished. And that's the end of Chapter 1. And next we'll read Chapter 2 called Spinner's End.
And I hope you like that, my baby kitten.
It's time for bed for the pup and the kitten now. Sleep well, beautiful.